It started with a whisper.
It seems that there's a bit of friction between Joe Root and the senior bowlers in particular.
This fantastic but troubled player who causes us difficulties time and again.
If you've got the best record one-on-one when it comes to Roger Federer, he's got the best head-to-head record against Rafa Nadal, and if he surpasses those players with Grand Slam titles, then he has to be the GOAT.
I wouldn't say that I'm religious at all, Matt, far from it, but I just wait the fact there's not a lot on. I can see the point of view and the argument for it, but I would prefer not to race on Good Friday.
On RSN Central, welcome to the Wednesday Forum.
Scotty Gallen, live from Melbourne Park, joins us here to kick off the Wednesday Forum. Hello to you, Scotty.
Hello, Gareth. How are you?
Good, thank you, mate. What is it like at that precinct this year?
Better than last year, obviously. Yes. There is a buzz. I mean, it's only 50%, but no, it's getting back closer and closer to what we're used to. So it's enjoyable, let's just say that.
You've been covering sport for nearly five decades these days, don't worry, Joe.
Yeah.
A couple of decades anyway. Have you ever met a sportsman like a Nick Kyrgios? What he can do for a sport like he's doing for tennis at the moment, good and bad?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's an extraordinary human being, and while we love it, you can't help but, like, you watched last night, and, like, I knew he'd do that. He was playing an inferior opponent, and you just think, and I know he hates people saying this to him, but imagine if he trained, had a run at it, and had a crack at one Grand Slam, and put 2 weeks of that together, because I can guarantee you, I mean, he's got a tough draw next match, but he's only fit enough, really, to play two or three matches in a row at a Grand Slam at the moment. And yes, you know, we love the way he says, oh, yeah, I'm not a full-time tennis player, but just imagine if he had one crack at it, Gareth.
Oh. I was thinking about it the other day, talking to a mate at the pub, and I thought, well, he'd be a great punting horse in a way if he was a thoroughbred or a standardbred, because you would probably see if you could buy him. And he might cost you a little bit because he's trialled the house down, especially over the 800 metres, and he'd smash the clock. But you give him to a Peter Moody or a Mick Price, Michael Kent Jr. or one of the great, the Freedmans, or I don't know. I'm missing out on several trainers that you could give him to.
But you
could work out and you could punt him first up and you say, mate, you get his head right and just set him for Wimbledon. You might get 100-1 and just punt him. Because at his best, if he puts it all together and he's fit and you get him mentally right, he's got the ability to win Grand Slams.
Of course he has. And all his players, like his rivals, know that. And, you know, the timing's right. If he got it together this year, I mean, you know, Rod is nearly gone, Rafa's sort of limping away, Djokovic, who knows what's going to happen with him. Like, there's opportunities if he had a crack at it, but unfortunately I don't trust him to do it.
And I don't think he cares, in a
no,
way
no, that's
people
what I mean. Yeah.
People say, "Well, you should have done this, or you should be a Grand Slam winner, or you should at least make the semi-finals." It's like he's got the attitude, "Well, this is how I want to live my life. Tennis isn't everything to me, and I'm just going out there to have some fun."
Initially, I thought it was a bit of bravado, like he's trying to be too cool. You know, this is who I am. But the longer it goes on, like he's mid to late 20s or whatever he is now, it's like, well, maybe this is it. He's not just trying to be the cool guy who says, oh, I don't care about tennis, but I'm really, really good at it. I'm like you. I think maybe this is just him.
Yeah, I think it is. And watching him last night with the second serve between his legs and all that, it is box office, isn't it? It's like you just don't know what you're going to get to him. And I was interested to read in the paper today, in your paper, the Herald Sun, his opponent actually said, well, I thought it would be actually fun going to play against the Nick Kyrgios, but it was terrible. He hated it, actually. He was getting abused by the time he walked onto the court.
Getting
I'm speaking
booed.
Of Liam, Liam Brody, the English tennis player. He was getting booed. He probably needed to have a chat to Stuart Broad before he took the court against Nick Kyrgios, but he's been able to try and, like, he can get that type of atmosphere on a court now.
Yeah, I know. It's the perfect tonic for this tournament after all the rubbish we've had the lead up. So it was good fun, and it'd be great if it kept rolling, but we're not sure.
Because he takes on Medvedev, the second seed in round number two, and that's a thing. I think he's $1.80 to lose in straight sets, and there's a strong possibility that will happen.
He might get up, maybe he might get up for one set and show some interest, but no, I mean, you'd think he's not, his body, well, he had COVID a week ago, his preparation's been all over the shop, but he was able to just be out there for minimal time last night, had a bit of fun, but it won't be as much fun against Medvedev.
No, so do you give him any chance?
Because
if you watched him there, last night, he looked like $1 million, didn't he?
No, but he won't back up as well. He might win the first set. I'd probably back him to win a set rather than losing three, and then probably could put.
The Aussies had a mixed day there yesterday. Who do you... Ash Barty, of course, she's unbackable to win her round two match. Apart from on the men's side of the draw, who do you think will go the deepest for Australia?
Well, Dimonor, the draws open up for him because the eighth seed, Rudd, he's withdrawn with injury. So the top half of his draw is wide open. He should get through to the fourth round comfortably, and then it gets a bit more interesting. But he looked good. He was playing an Italian teenager who was a bit of a freak, so he's going to be a good player. But he took care of him in four sets. I think the Demon has had a good preparation. He had a horror year last year. I think he's the one who, now that the draw's opened up a little bit, I'd be backing him to get through to the fourth round at least.
Yeah, he got broken, I think, in that game against Massetti, as you pointed out, the young Italian star there last night.
He can play.
He can, can't he? But he did dominate the rest of the match, 6-3, 6-love, 6-3. And you felt a little bit for Alex Dimonor because he is, the 32 seed in the Australian Open. And if you're watching the coverage, you probably didn't even realise he was playing because Nick Kyrgios, who schedules that? What's going on there?
I know, to have them both on 7 o'clock on different courts. No, that was an interesting way to do it. Two local heroes. Surely you'd soak up Nick and then make sure the Demon had his own space somewhere.
And well done to Sam Stosur as well. This is her final Australian Open, and usually this isn't her Grand Slam. She usually bows out pretty early. But she won her opening match yesterday. Yeah, that was great, I thought.
Yeah, it was high emotion, wasn't it? I was sort of outside the court and people were getting whispers that she was going well and they were flooding in to, I think it was Kia Arena. And it's a great story. I mean, she knows, obviously she's retiring, but normally in recent times she would have blown that, but it was just great to see her, rally again and win it in three. And you don't forget she's a Grand Slam champion, but she had 12 months there where she was the world's best. It was extraordinary. Or maybe 6 months. She just had a purple patch and it's been a great career.
Who's your tip for the Australian Open? Can Ash Barty do it? She's nice and short.
I'm taking the $7 on Osaka, unfortunately. I mean, I love Ash. I think she's in amazing shape. She's serving better. But Osaka in the fourth round, surely we can rig the draw for our own people. Whoever makes this is a disaster for the whole tournament, that the fourth round will be these two. Osaka just grows a leg on these courts. She's a different beast. She's had 3 months off, but she's got her head right. And she, as much as Ash is going beautifully, I'm really worried. So I'm punting on Osaka now at the sevens. So that means when she beats Ash, she'll be like $1.50 after that.
Daniil Medvedev, is he your tip in the men's? He defeated Larkison pretty easily there in his first round match, 6-1, 6-4, 7-6. Of course, he takes on Nick Kyrgios in round two tomorrow.
There's not a lot of trust in the men's. I like the fairy tale of Rafa. I mean, has his preparation been enough? He could easily go deep and then sort of ride the wave of emotion. So Rafa's the better price. Medvedev, probably Zverev, I don't trust. He still hasn't really nailed it. So either Medvedev or Rafa I'd be interested in. And in the women, there's Paula Badosa's the other one. She's 15-1. I saw her play her first round and it was very impressive. So someone like that's going to come out of the pack. So maybe Badosa's one to look at.
0416 90 50 52 to join our conversation. Scotty Cooney and Matty Nevitt are going head-to-head with their multis each and every day at the Australian Open. It's fair to say it's been a slow start for the two lads. And Scotty Cooney walked into the offices when I first saw him today, and he's got a new golden rule now. He's not adding a player that's under $1.20 because I think the last couple of days he has been flying, but the $1.05 or $1.06 shot has got beaten, which is always the case. Doesn't matter if it's tennis or racing Maltese. I always get knocked out by the shortest price that I have in that Maltese. There's a few SMSs coming through here, Scotty. Gareth, if Kyrgios was a horse, the first thing you would do is geld him. Otherwise, you'd be wasting your time. That's a good point, Roger. Absolutely loving Kyrgios. He's a real-life Happy Kilmore, complete with the inappropriate fans and everything. That's from Glenn. He makes a good point there, Glenn. Hey, just before we take a break, and I know that you're big on this, the Commonwealth Games. Now, it's like when you're talking to your mates and you think, well, it's your turn to host the party this year, and then all of a sudden you're running out of options in a way that you've got to an age that no one really wants to host a party anymore, or you've moved on in life. People have got families and et cetera. It looks like to me now that the Commonwealth Games, does anyone care about them anymore? Because there's been an SOS call to Melbourne to say, can you host the next Games for us 20 years after we hosted the Commonwealth Games?
It's one of those ones. When they're on, people get excited. But before that, maybe not. But Birmingham, people get interested, won't they? When we start winning Aussie
Gold everywhere.
Do you
think so? Yeah. Well, are they going to change up the Commonwealth Games? Would you do that? How would you
revolutionise it?
Yeah, are you happy with it at the moment?
I'm not happy with it. I mean, the Olympics is... I'm not happy with the Olympics putting in, rock climbing and stuff like that. So I'm not one of those types. I don't like that you have to get too funky to get people interested in these events. Commonwealth Games, we'll like it when we win an Aussie Gold, Gareth. We love it. The drug, we get lured into it, get all happy clappy for 2 weeks. Like, how good are we when it's virtually the school sports in some events, but in other events, it's really the highest quality. So, I'm still a supporter, Gareth. I'm a traditionalist.
So would you support Melbourne in hosting the Commonwealth Games?
What year are we going to do that?
4 years' time. After the games are in England this time around.
Birmingham,
right? Yeah, Birmingham. So after Birmingham, they need to host the games. Because Birmingham had to go 4 years early because South Africa couldn't host it. And now Birmingham will host it next year. And then they need someone else to do it 4 years later.
So 2026, it's not a bad lead into Brisbane, maybe. I mean, Melbourne, we do it very well. I mean, 2006 was an amazing event. So... oh, yeah, I'd say yes. We've got all the infrastructure here. It wouldn't be a great burden. We wouldn't have to build stadiums or any of that sort of stuff. No. Because we've got Brisbane on the horizon, that's not the silliest idea.
0416 90 50 52. Would you like the Commonwealth Games back in Melbourne in 5 years' time from now? It's 10:47. Gareth Hall's got a gallon with you. This is the Wednesday Forum. It is 11 minutes to 11 o'clock here on RSN Central. This is the Wednesday Forum. Gareth Hall's got a gallon with you. Scotty, what did you make of a few of the cricketers there celebrating until the early hours of the morning a couple of days ago. I thought it was sensational, wasn't it?
Oh, how good. I mean, both teams celebrating, having a few beers together.
It's a fair old session, however.
Yeah, no, it's a good session.
It is a really good session.
Well, they've been going hard at it for, 2 months, and then... how's the police? I mean, noise complaint, come on. It's the Ashes. The boys are letting their hair down. And then even the next day at the brewery, the boys were... I like it. It just shows they're not human, but they're a bit like us, Gareth. After a big event, they're letting their hair down and having a crack.
Yeah, So they finished about 10:30, 11 o'clock. So it was a solid session, but they would have been going all night. So they're at their hotel, I think. So it was about 6 a.m. in the morning. So they wouldn't have probably finished up and wrapped up after all of their team meetings till, say, about 1 or 2 o'clock. And then they're just catching up, having a few beers.
No, I thought I loved every second of it.
Yeah. So did I. Jimmy Anderson and Joe Root have just gone up my estimations a little bit as well. Like, what? A couple of legends just got smashed, but enjoying a couple of, on the field, mind you, and they're just enjoying a couple of beers off it with a few of the Australian lads.
I think Root, I mean, I've got a lot of sympathy for him. I mean, that team is horrible, and he's borne the brunt of all that. So I'm glad he's had a few beers to try and wash it away.
Yeah, no, totally agree. The big question now is, and I find this one of the most fascinating stories in Australian sport for quite some time. The situation with the coach, Justin Langer. Now, it's been going for 6 or so months. I remember when Malcolm Conn was on our show after he broke the story saying that he might not survive after the T20 World Cup because the players can't play for him, or they don't want to play under him because he just takes it too far with his intensity. But since then, he's won a T20 World Cup and he's won an Ashes 4-0.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that you could sack a guy after that. But the players, it appears that he's changed, and I don't mind splitting up the role, and maybe that's their way of getting rid of him. Like, they might say, look, we believe it needs two coaches, and if he doesn't like it, maybe he walks. But I can't see any way that you could sell the Australian public sacking Justin Langer.
No, and McDonald's meant to be the front runner. They tell me the players just love Andrew McDonald, but from reports,
he doesn't want to do it. Well, so, I think he knows, JL, how good Langer is. It's like, well, I'm part of this team. It's working. Why would I want to be one out? So if he says, no, don't do it, just don't do it. Just keep rolling.
Why haven't they just come out and said then, like, if they were going to re-sign him, Patrick Cummins... Yeah. Heads to the board of CA and say, well, he's changed his way, JL.
Yeah.
We're enjoying him right now, what he's doing. We're loving the environment. Just sign him up again. But this hasn't happened.
Why rock the boat? I mean, it's a new era. Cummings is embarking on a new era. So having the same coach to help him would make sense rather than shuffling the coaches as well. You know what they're like, these organisations. Oh, someone will do a report and they'll... I mean, just ridiculous. The guy is it. We'll sort out the finer details, but we're sticking with JL.
Did you watch the Big Bash match last night between the Melbourne Renegades and the Hobart Hurricanes?
I saw the end, where it was getting a little bit exciting. Yeah.
Like, I was watching the Renegades. They were 1 for 80-odd, and they had two of the great T20 batsmen of the modern era at the crease, and Aaron Finch and also Sean Marsh, and they still found a way to lose.
Yeah.
Like, the Renegades are a concern for mine. I know that there's a bit happening politically with the way that these two Big Bash sides are set up here in Victoria, but both this time around have been woeful. I know that the Stars have had their excuses because of COVID ripping through the squad and an important part of the competition. But the Renegades, like, they should not have lost that match against the Hurricanes.
No, that was terrible. I mean, they just can't get it right, can they? And it's like the Brisbane Heat also. Like, on paper, you keep thinking they're going to do something, and they're every year disappoint. So there's definitely a gulf between the well-organised, good list and the also-rans, which is a concern for that competition, which, again, I sense is struggling a bit this year.
Yeah. It goes for too long. They've got to have matches that mean more to each and every time that they play. Less is more. It's a bit like the NFL. Let them play against each other once. So if you lose a match early part, that could be the end of your season. During the Christmas, New Year period when everybody's out playing backyard cricket and we look forward to watching some cricket. And the other part about it, and it's not their fault in a way, Cricket Australia, but it did hurt when they had 6 or 7 stars in a test squad that couldn't play in the Big Bash.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Why was Mitch Marsh and those guys, what were they there?
Because of the COVID bubble. If they got COVID or someone got COVID, they couldn't bring in the players that they wanted. It didn't quite make sense for mine because they were still travelling on commercial flights. So if one player got COVID, then there was a big chance that the whole team would have in a way. No. So I couldn't quite work out the thinking there. Like most of the thinking in the COVID world that we are living in at the moment. Scotty, what do you make of the William Pike situation? He's about to join us, hopefully, in about 5 or 6 minutes' time. He's heading to Sydney to recommence his writing career.
I'm very excited for this interview and well done on getting him. I understand he'll explain his beliefs to you, and I'm glad he's still writing, let's be honest, but I didn't know. Are New South Wales going to change their policy, or this is what they're going with full time?
Well, this is the state government's policy in New South Wales. So they opened up the state basically on December 15. If you're not vaccinated, you still get the same rights as the people that are vaccinated. It hasn't gone to plan it's fair to say, for the New South Wales government since. And I know that broadcasters like Ray Hadley have been very vocal and they've criticised the Premier in the way that he's handled this situation over the last month or so, because they are struggling to cope with it at the moment in New South Wales. But it's rugby league. You don't have to be double vaccinated. Players can't play, of course, if you're based in New South Wales.
In Melbourne,
you can't play in Melbourne or Queensland. That's the rules there. But
it's a bit like Kyrie Irving in the NBA. You can't 100%. Play at his home deck, but he can play away game.
Yeah, it's it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. But William hasn't broken the laws or broken the rules. He is abiding by them. He's got his own beliefs, and he wants to recommence his career in Sydney. So looking forward to having a chat to him there. Just with the AFL, the holding the ball rules. I know Dane Sorko was on the Breakfast Club this morning, and he doesn't quite understand it just yet, which is the big concern for everybody. We make all of these rules so complicated.
Well, I mean, some of the examples on the video, I think we all understand. Yeah, well, he did a 360, so it's probably holding the ball. So I think it's maybe more common sense that we already sort of know what they're talking about. They're just going to enforce it better. I think that's what we're going. But again, you're right. I mean, they put these press releases out and say, we're not changing the rules, we're just going to enforce them more. And it's very confusing.
It is. I think Jamie Carr will have a big day today.
She's
a $1.01 in the... at Sandown today in to be the leading jockey there at
Sandown. She took a little while to get going, but I think she's got her mojo back, wasn't it?
Back. So we'll be catching up with a few of the major players for the Form Express today, Scotty. I know that you're busy. Is there a tab at Melbourne Park?
There used to be, no. There's not a tab, but I will be watching the races in my spare time here, in between sets.
Good on you, Scotty. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Gareth.